Greetings and welcome to another edition of Metanoia. Metanoia is a Greek word. It means to change your mind or go beyond limitation, your mental limitations. We see noia, meta. Meta means beyond or to change. Noia is the word for your mind. So it's about changing our minds. And we have a truly exciting guest. He's been on the program before. He's a genuine Renaissance man. He's a filmmaker. He's a writer. He's a researcher. He's an entertainer. He's a record producer. He's an internet pioneer, started an internet radio station. He's a talk show host, internet television. And he's a master chef, master vegan chef and a nutritionist. And so it's my distinct pleasure and to welcome back to Metanoia, Kitty Obi Owadu. Welcome, brother. How are you?
My brother Junius, how am I today? Today is a wonderful day. I started it off bright and early, taking a math class on trading policies, and then, of course, doing our daily broadcast. And I just got off with a dear friend who's got a wonderful business in East Africa. And now I'm on this beautiful network with you two beautiful brothers. I would say today is a good day. I won't even have to use my AK.
There's some of your background. Now, you've been on before, and some of our subscribers are familiar with you, but getting new subscribers all the time. So share some of your background. Talk about your background and what interested you into science and investigative reporting and journalism.
That's right. Well, I make this story as brief as I possibly can. I come from a family of very distinguished intellectuals. My father was an industrial chemist. My mother was just an absolute genius, one of those kind of people who get into college when still a teenager and just perform outstandingly. We grew up in a rural area of Ohio, 3 miles too far outside of Columbus, Ohio suburb. And so we moved into a rural area, and I kind of had to grow up a little bit of the hick life, but it was great because it was a bridge between our urban connections and rural connections. And I found out that that taught me a lot about the nature of life and life of nature. During my scholastic years, I performed very, very well, was very good at math and sciences, and happened to have lucked out, as fate would have it, that when I graduated high school, despite the fact that I was a high academic performer, honor roll student, I never actually even enrolled in college, only to find myself a year after leaving high school working for 4 years in a biological research laboratory where my curiosity had me learning a lot about molecular biology during those 4 years. Leaving then, traveling the world for 30 years as a professional musician, ended up settling in Southern California, and then tapping into a lot of the different phases of life that we've been able to carry forward, including that was where I began my writing career. Very proud to say, as of last week, I've just published my 50th independently written and published book, and the book is entitled Miracle on 2 Feet, Stroke Prevention and Recovery. So we're on a roll, Brother Junius. The best is still yet to come.
Indeed, indeed. And we're looking forward to that. Our subscribers are very astute, very well-informed, have access to much information data on a regular basis. So some of the things that many people would cringe or become reticent to discuss, we don't have that problem. We don't really have the problem of censorship and deplatforming, even though attempts have been made at that. So you don't have to worry about, you know, saying something that might generate the censor bots or the AI filters. And you're speaking to an audience that is very articulate and very well-informed, in my view. So you don't have to worry about being branded a conspiracy theorist.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our subscribers are aware that we are under a vicious attack on multiple levels. their attempts to play God and to terraform the planet, to move into, you know, hyper transhumanism, things like that. So tell us what we can do to move beyond that, because our adversaries have told us resistance is futile. You can't win. The mind control is so pervasive that folks aren't even aware that they're being duped. And so what can you say to people who subscribe to the Solari Report to encourage them and also to give them more information that they can use as resistance? And today's program is resistance, knowledge, and health as revolutionary tactics.
Mm-hmm. Very good and very challenging subject you're putting on the table. And I want to congratulate Solari Broadcasting for collecting people, informing people, and inspiring people to be skeptical about the world. And if I could say the first thing I would say, make this as brief as possible, approach life with a sense of enthusiasm, but always keep your skepticism in place, especially when it comes to communications, mass communications. As you are very well aware, Brother Junius, the level of propaganda that is saturating the public, whether that propaganda be business-oriented to get us to consume these particular products, will soil all of your ills, consume these medical pharmaceutical drug complexes, despite the fact that they won't cure your ills, they'll at least suppress the symptoms, to consume information that is seductive, but often not even accurate enough to build upon a foundation where it is only the truth that will set us free. So number one, be skeptical. Number two, part of successful skepticism is a high level of functional literacy. And as I look across society, I think this is one of the biggest mistakes that's being happening to younger now, is that the level of literacy that our parents worked so hard for and made a foundation for you and I to be the beneficiary thereof, the highest level of information and education and literacy we could achieve, now we're seeing that being displaced by electronic media, social media, by pointless consumerism and other things. So number two on my list of must-have for high quality life is a high level of functional literacy. Number three that I would put on this list is your health is your wealth. Your wealth is your health. Too often we've seen so many people who will use up their health towards the goal of gaining wealth, only to find now that they have gained their wealth, they can't enjoy that wealth in their senior years. And now they're spending their wealth to try to regain their health. The two are not mutually exclusive. In fact, we do know with a focus on health and prosperity that's coordinated, we can achieve a very high quality extended lifespan. So those are three fundamentals that I would put on the table for today's discussion. And be skeptical, be well-educated, be as healthy as your well-educated skeptical mind can support.
Very good. Very good response. You talk about literacy. Now, you have published 50 books, some of them in the last 18 months. I mean, you're on a record pace. So how can people become familiar with your books? How can they see some of the books? How can they purchase the books? Because one of the things that our adversaries are doing is suppressing information and suppressing and censoring information. So anytime you have them suppressing someone like Robert Kennedy in his book on Anthony Fauci, and we know what the censorship with the big tech is doing. So where can people go directly to see and find your material?
Well, thank you for that invitation. I always appreciate that. I'm very fortunate to have one of those first names that's rather unusual, K-E-I-D-I. And so people can really just put my first name in a search engine, put the word books next to it, or videos, or radio, or whatever, and they'll be able to see that particular function of my life. I am very widely published through the major booksellers, of which Amazon.com has some 44 of my books up for sale right now, as well as Barnes and Nobles and some of the other major booksellers. Walmart even has a number of my books on sale available. So, and then I have my own website where people can get the autographed books from me in case you don't want to go through the major booksellers. Come directly to the writer, the publisher, and I'll autograph that to you at keidikidi.biz. I'll be happy to do that. And thank you for the opportunity to let people know we have this incredible archive of books. Now, we need to make sure that these books have the greatest possible opportunity to be in the hands of people who are committed to be the cutting edge leadership that's going to help us all to define a new, prosperous, sustainable future.
Several years ago, you were on the program and Catherine Austin Fitz followed it up by featuring your movie, Chewicide. So how can people, that and that's in the archives here on Solari, but how can people find out more about the film and look at that and gain access to that?
It's been a few years since I've really been able to invest any energy into Chewicide, the movie, but it is out there. And people can go to my website, keidi.biz, and you'll be able to find Chewicide, the movie. I never did push the movie into the streaming domain because I always felt like the movie, it's very loaded with information. It's many people said that it's funny, it's fun, informative, and inspiring. But I never thought that the production quality was up to the par that I would really want to stamp my name on it. Always intended to taking Chewicide back into the studio, shooting a few more scenes, editing it a little bit tighter, and then pushing it back out there. But insofar as the information in that documentary film, Chewicide, I stand by that. The information was really, really good. It's just that, as you know, Brother Junius, making films is very expensive. And the budget that I had to do it on, I had to kind of cut corners a little bit that I don't necessarily think held up so well over the course of time that the movie's been out now.
Well, again, today's program is Resistance, Information Health as Revolutionary Tactics. And so I want to focus on several issues that you have been in the forefront of for numerous years. One of them is depopulation, declining birth rates, and you have a book that addresses that. It's entitled Missing Assets. Many people are concerned, we're seeing, especially after the past three and a half years. So what's the premise of missing assets? What's its foundation based upon, the research that it's based upon? And why do we need to be clear that these things are actually happening right now?
Mm-hmm. I've been writing on topics of demographics, population control, eugenics, and race or race-based reproductive competition since the early 1990s, when I wrote a book called Another Loaded Needle, the SPF 66 malaria vaccine and the campaign to decimate the population of Africa. And when I put that book out, I was really kind of in fear for my life because the book was really so devastating. And I named the names of some powerful people who were associated with these vaccination campaigns taking place on the African continent. So I remember secretly sending the book out to 100 different sources, one of which responded. And that was a DC-based think tank called the Information Project for Africa. Their response was, "This is good work. We appreciate that. Here's the work that we do." So I was then initiated, welcomed into a group of 338 journalists from around the world. Our primary focuses were national security policies as they affected the African continent, population-related issues, as well as the link between demographics and empowerment of nations, empowerment of civilization. So I came to learn a lot and was schooled by some very, very good researchers on these themes of demographics, population, and the future. And since then, I have become really an authority and expert on that. And I always remind people, the future belongs to those best prepared to create that future today. And one of the greatest things that we can do that has been done since the dawn of human civilization to create the future is to bear children. Unfortunately, we've seen a dramatic change in childbearing and demographics within the last few decades on this planet. Good for some, bad for others, and very, very bad for others. And it deals with replacement rates, fertility replacement rates. So that book, Missing Assets, goes to the heart of this. The subtitle of the book, Cultural, Biological, and Psychological Origins of Infertility. And as you know, Brother Junius, there were some very devastating revelations in that book, including quotations by people, powerful people, who are committed to reshaping the future of the planet by limiting childbirths among certain ethnic groups.
That's true. And what we're finding out is that the agenda is global, because you're talking about Africa, but it also entails Asia, Europe, and the United States. So elaborate on that a little bit, because people tend to, when we say it, people say, "Ah, well, you're paranoid, or you're caught up in the past. You don't want to look to the future and see how bright and opportunistic things are." So share some of your demographic research with us so that we can make sense and connect the dots with current events.
One of the first references that I used appeared in the book Population War, Report from the Front Line, which came out in 1996. That reference was from the Futurist magazine. So this is at a time when I was aware of the sciences related to futurism, but this is where I became more and more formally engaged with becoming what I am now, a scientific futurist. And I remember distinctively this article from 1993 from Futurist magazine entitled The Old, Old World. And it talked about aging in European nations. And they made a prediction that by the end of the century, the 20th century, that several European nations will have lost their momentum insofar as childbearing, and that deaths would increasingly outnumber childbirths. Germany serves as one example where this clearly came to bear. And at the time I was doing comparative studies about fertility towards the aim of, can these numbers predict the future? And at that time, I recall comparing the Democratic Republic of the Congo to Germany, whereas in Germany, a very low death rate per 1,000 people in the population of 10 deaths or so per year per German, but that the birth rate in Germany was less than the death rate. And so for every 10 people who died in Germany, 8 babies were born. And this also accompanies aging process, and it also impacts what's called the support ratio of workers supporting either the very young or the very old in population. Then when I compared them to the Democratic Republic of the Congo, compared to Germany's 10 deaths per 1,000 in the population, the Congo had a relatively high of 12 deaths per 1,000 in the population, but their birth rate compared to Germany's 8 births per 1,000 was 45 per 1,000. So in essence, the Germans were having less deaths than the Congolese, but the Congolese had 5 times higher birth rate, over 5 times higher birth rate. So now I've come to much more fully understand what this is all about. And the youthfulness of a nation really determines that nation's status in the world over the coming generations. And so right now, the youngest nations in the world are Chad, Uganda, and nearly, in fact, when we look at the top 20 youngest nations in the world, 18 of them are African nations. And another one of those top 20 is a Caribbean majority Black nation. Demographics do matter. It's the first stage of civilization formation. It always has been, and it will continue to be for the future.
Now, we recently in this country had a ruling by the Supreme Court. And for years, you talked about demographics and you talked about the effectiveness of the depopulation program called abortion, Planned Parenthood. Do you think that that recent ruling will reverse these demographic trends in terms of the lower birth rates? If so, how will that impact, you know, the world of work and things that are going on now? And if not, how does that bode for the United States as a power remaining a dominant?
When it comes to the abortions that took place in this country from 1973 until 2023, we're talking about a 50 year period. And yes, in essence, the horse is already out of the barn, horse is out of the stable on that one. Insofar as the United States, has always paid close attention to birth rate differentials. In fact, the earliest research that I have dates back to about 1937, when in the aftermath of the 1924 National Emigration Act, which after that point choked off the free flow, unchecked flow of European people into the United States. In the aftermath of that, demographers started predicting that the future of the American population ethnic makeup is going to be based upon birth rates, birth rate differentials. And at that time, they predicted that because Blacks in America, Negroes at the time, had such a higher fertility rate per woman, they predicted, and again, this creates an exponential curve as this moves through generations, they predicted that somewhere in the middle of the 21st century, America would have a non-white majority, which is actually moving rather firmly towards that. But at that time, they predicted that the majority population in America would eventually become people of African heritage. Now, that's 1937. Then we see an appearance of the book, An American Dilemma, The Negro Problem and Modern Democracy, which comes out in 1944, published by Harper and Row, the book financed by Andrew Carnegie and presented to Franklin Roosevelt during the Second World War. So the appearance of that book really is very strategic. I'm not going to go off on that tangent right now, but here's what they did say. In the chapter on Negro population, they had subchapter 4 called Negro Population Policy. Page 167, they began with this quote: "If we forget about the means for the moment and consider only the quantitative goal, there is no doubt that the overwhelming majority of white Americans desire that there be as few Negroes as possible in America. If the Negroes could be eliminated from America or greatly decreased in numbers, this would meet the whites' approval, provided that it could be accomplished by means which are also approved." 3 pages later, page 170 of An American Dilemma, now they start talking about the means. We might start off with the desire of the dominant white population to get rid of the Negroes. And then they started laying out a series of different strategies by which they would accomplish this. And they check them off the list and say, this one's impractical. Exporting the Negroes is not possible because of nations not willing to take in this large population. Ultimately, when they said the Negroes cannot be killed off because it's expensive to society and dangerous to the whites, they said ultimately it would be a matter of controlling fertility, but that all attempts to control fertility would have to be directed at other rational means other than that of lowering the Negro population. So therefore, fast forward from 1944 to Roe v. Wade, 1973, In the first 2 years after Roe v. Wade, Black people in America pretty much rejected abortion. In fact, Black leaders such as Jesse Jackson and others spoke out against abortion, saying that this was a form of population control, of genocide. But then Jesse Jackson ran for president, and you know he flipped his policy there and then began to embrace the liberal agenda and feminist agenda, which had latched onto the idea that abortion was solely a woman's right. All along, I have said childbirthing is a function of people and groups that are committed to survival. So therefore, the last question I would say, or point I would say, is that does a woman have the right to choke off, cut off, and end her family's bloodline through her own personal intentions? Of course, as a person of African heritage, the answer to that question is no, she does not have the right to eliminate what our grandparents, great-great-grandparents, and their grandparents fought so hard to preserve, and that was a future for our group.
Right, and also we want to look at the political organizations that also pushed that on other groups. In other words,
that's right.
U.S. Supreme Court validated sterilization, and they focused on certain demographics, socioeconomic demographics, included a lot of what quote unquote poor whites. So this whole notion of reduced demographics is coming back to, I think, to bite them, but it's also being pushed in other areas. So I wanted to talk about the other book, Panic, which you published in the early stages of the SARS-CoV-2, better known as COVID, terrorism campaign. That's what I'm calling this, propaganda terrorism. So what were your findings? And this is a scientific book, by the way. So what were your findings about that? How does that dovetail into population control, as well as moving away from your passion, pure science?
That's a very good question. It's a tough question, and I always welcome tough questions. I'll put this in the context really of kind of evolution of my molecular science life. During the course of many, many years of looking at these subjects, I studied epidemiology, virology, molecular biology, human physiology. So in 1984, the world is now alarmed by the rise of a new, originally called GRID, gay-related infectious disease. Later in 1984, on April 23rd, Margaret Heckler and Robert J. Gallo step to the stage and say, "We have discovered the probable cause of AIDS," and it was Gallo's formerly discredited retroviral idea. So I, because I had this background in molecular biology and understanding and reading a lot of scientific papers, I said, well, this is a serious subject. And because it appears to be directed with Black people kind of at the bullseye, the crosshairs of a target here, I'm going to study it for my group of people to be able to tell our people how we can better protect ourselves from this newly appearing HIV virus. During the course of that study, I started acquiring all the material I possibly could. I remember there was a brother, Zeers Miles, I'm sure you probably heard of him, who was considered to be one of the foremost authorities on this topic. So I bought a big document, big stack of papers from Zeers Miles, paid about $50 for them in the 1980s. That was a little bit of money. But as I started going through these documents, going into libraries, I went to UCLA, I went to USC, Cal State University, Long Beach. I went to Emory University libraries, Johns Hopkins University libraries. I spent hours and hours in those libraries. I could not help but understand this doesn't really hold up. There were too many contradictions using pure science method for me to believe the story as it's being told. So I wrote a total of three books that came out on that. The first book, I believed in the virus. The second book, I then questioned the virus. called AIDS Exposed, even citing five Nobel Prize winning scientists that had questioned this whole notion of this virus causing all of this havoc. So eventually, by the third book, was entitled, originally it was entitled AIDS, the Establishment Confesses It's a Hoax. Later, I updated the book and reprinted it, and it's now called The Great AIDS Swindle. So therefore, when COVID-19 comes along in February 2020, I initially wanted to dismiss it because I'll be honest with you, I was tired of talking about HIV and AIDS and everything. The problem was is that I'm seeing the same thing. It's coming out. It's being reacted again. So I spent 3 days in a row gathering up all of the papers, and I did three broadcasts on my morning show. All of them confirmed this is the same thing being done all over again, including the antibody tests confusing true infection with having immunoglobulin to elements in your blood that show up as positive on these tests. So therefore, I had to put the book out. I put the book out rather quickly. Again, I started studying this at the beginning of February, and the last day of May, the book Panic, What the Coronavirus Tells Us About the State of the World came out. And I'm very, very proud, Brother Junius. The book has held up tremendously well over the 3 years that it's been out. And now we have a whole nother level of understanding because of over 2 years of data on the injections, these mAbs, they could be called, or mRNA injections. We have some very devastating information to add to our understanding of panic. And the new information that we have is the devastating number of people who have died prematurely because of injections with these non-vaccinations.
And for me, it was very simple. I started looking at the hype about AIDS and who was involved. And all of a sudden today, you see the same cast of characters. Anthony Fauci.
That's right.
Same pattern. You have AZT, which turns out to be highly toxic. And you have the same situation with these mRNA concoctions. So to me, it's a different page of the same playbook, as just that the big pharma is going to reap more money. But at the same time, you're going to see a much larger swath of humanity suffer as a result of these so-called modalities that were, using their terms, repurposed from cancer treatments and rushed in to the breach of these other conditions. So you're always about solutions. You're always about change and giving humanity a chance to climb up and to be better. So you're into exercise and physicality. So tell us about that and why is that important?
When it comes to solutions, we got to get real serious. We got to get real specific. Earlier, we talked about be skeptical, be very well informed, and be healthy by every means necessary. Well, let's build upon that. So when we're talking about being skeptical, we need to be skeptical, very skeptical about the standard Western diet, the SAD, standard American diets. The abbreviation is SAD, and it is indeed SAD. And we are very skeptical about genetically engineered foods, genetically modified organisms. The level of sugar consumed in the Western diet is the highest level of sugar consumption ever eaten in human history. And when we look at the spectrum of inflammation-related diseases that are exacerbated by such high levels of sugar consumption, it's absolutely scandalous. When we look at the impact of Americans eating an average of 100 kilograms of meat per person per year, and the fact of the matter is, you can be optimally healthy without eating any meat, without eating any eggs, any cheese, any dairy products. In fact, it's totally illogical for most humans, not all, but most humans, to attempt to consume dairy products after the age of 36 months when we've weaned ourselves off of milk. It's illogical, Brother Junius, for humans to feed their babies the milk of another species, let alone mother's milk is designed to grow a baby's brain for 3 years outside of the mother's womb. Our head, relative to the size of our body, is just that large that it has to grow outside the womb. But then we're feeding our children huge amounts of dairy, which is intended for a calf to grow a huge body in a short period of time with a relatively small brain. We're doing so many things wrong. It's almost an absurdity the way the people have bought into these programs of self-limitation and degradation of the human spirit. So to build upon being skeptical, being well-informed, and being healthy, we're also going to add to that, be a human. Eat what humans are supposed to eat. Humans are primates, and humans are mammals. If we look at the most successful longevity in mammals and in primates, we can see beyond a shadow of a doubt, those longevity mammals and primates are not omnivores. They are not carnivores. They are vegetarians. And that goes it pretty much confirms across a number of different classes of animal species. Which ones live longer? The vegetarians outlive the carnivores.
Right. Now, you've published several books. You've done the research. You talk about living superfoods. Now, you just, this is a perfect segue into living superfoods. So what are living superfoods, and how does that build upon the foundation that you just mentioned in terms of vegetarianism and a more plant-based diet?
Yeah. First of all, we begin with a foundation. Food is nature's most perfect medicine. It's been said so many times. Hippocrates made some very powerful statements along that. Hippocrates himself studied at the school of Aesculapius, which was the Greek deification of the world's first multi-genius Imhotep, who made very powerful statements about food and medicine and maintaining our health. So food is nature's most perfect medicine. When we come to food, different people eat different ways. And in the book, Living Superfood Research, we talk about the 11-stage eating hierarchy or nutritional hierarchy. And we'll just quickly go through this. The worst of the worst at level one is junk food. Level two is fast food, to include restaurant food, second from the worst. Number three is the standard American diet, SAD, as we'd called it. Number four, people say, well, I don't eat pork. I don't eat beef. That's a modified SAD diet because they're eating everything else Americans eat. Then comes vegetarian, which in this society defines eggs and dairy are called vegetables. Above vegetarian, now we're getting to vegan. And it's been proven that vegans and vegetarians have the much lower rates of certain types of cancer and do outlive by an average of 12 years their meat-eating compatriots. But here's the thing. Vegetarian isn't strong enough now. We're seeing vegetarians that are overweight, obese, dying of diabetes, metabolic disorders, and vegetarians dying of cancer and prematurely of cardiovascular disease. So vegetarian and vegan is not yet strong enough. So here's where my research now starts to take over. Level seven, above vegan, is the 80-20 vegan. 80% of my food is uncooked, with preserving the enzymes and the integrity of vitamins and minerals, and only 20% cooked. Above that, now we add in the detoxification lifestyle so that not only am I eating healthy throughout the entire year, but four times a year for 20 years, I have engaged in up from anywhere from 14 to 28 days of a systemic detoxification program. So we've introduced detoxification in. So we got the raw foods with living enzymes and detox. Then we come to my designation, which is my brand, Living Superfood. So it's not only raw, enzyme rich, vitamins and minerals intact, but we're eating superfoods. Superfoods are the foods that have the classification of the highest quality of the spectrum of eight critical classes of nutrients necessary to sustain human life and thriving for robust health throughout our lives. Superfoods include foods like goji berries, flax seeds, hemp seeds, chia seeds, sesame seeds. They contain the full spectrum of amino acids, including the 9 essential amino acids necessary as building blocks for us to build life. Superfoods include sea vegetables, super blue green algae, spirulina, coconut products, honey products. We have a number of these awesome, awesome foods which really deliver nutrition packed and they're easily accessible. Lastly, on this hierarchy of 1 to 11, number 11 is called orthomolecular medicine, Greek for correct molecule. Orthomolecular medicine is the fastest, most direct healing system known using food as medicine. The difference between orthomolecular medicine and my brand is orthomolecular medicine is boring. Living superfood is extremely exciting. And that's where the work as a culinary artist comes in.
All right. So how can people get more information? Where can they go to see frequently asked questions and responses to those frequently asked questions so that they become more aware and they can bring into their personal lifestyle more energetic and more beneficial foodstuffs?
Well, as you mentioned, I do have these books and I'm just briefly sharing a screen. And unfortunately, it doesn't want to act just right. So it glitched on me. Hopefully, it'll unglitch real quickly. I apologize for that, but I did not anticipate the screen would lock up. I should be seeing one of my books there, Missing Assets. Am I correct?
I don't see anything.
Yeah, and it's not letting me page turn. And it is not, unfortunately, something on my computer glitch. I apologize. We had done this. Tested this a little bit earlier. So I'm going to come out of this. Okay, you do see the books right now. You see the book Living Superfood Research. Am I correct? This is also the website, livingsuperfood.com. And I encourage people to go there, take a look through my collection of books, and hopefully you will be informed, inspired. We had talked a little bit earlier about the book Panic, another book we had mentioned a little bit earlier. And that book is Missing Assets. And we do highly encourage people to get into the library at livingsuperfood.com, where we say food is nature's most perfect medicine. And medicine they never tasted like this before. It really is awesome. And when we talk about the chronic diseases, metabolic diseases that people are going through, Brother Junius, as you know, there are some people in the community that have been on hypertension, high blood pressure medicine for over a decade.
Dialysis.
Dialysis, of course, that's gone much further down the rabbit hole. You should have fixed your metabolic disorder long before it took out your kidneys. But here's the thing, Junius. I have people that come over to my house. We'll have a scrumptious dinner, and I'll tell them, don't take your blood pressure medicine for one night. I never tell them to stop taking it, period. But if just one night is not going to hurt you unless you're in really bad shape. And then measure your blood pressure tomorrow after eating this way, after drinking these green juices, the Vortex and others that we prepared. And I had one of the most recent experiences. A man did that. 16 hours later, his blood pressure had reduced by 29 points. I've had people normalize their blood pressure in anywhere from 36 hours to 5 days using food as nature's most perfect medicine. I'm not the only one doing this. Dr. Gabriel Cousins has a documentary film out called Simply Raw, the 30-Day Diabetes Raw Food Challenge, where he showed a group of people, including type 1 diabetics, reversing or significantly impacting their diabetes diagnosis in just 30 days of consuming superfoods the way that nature prepared us to consume them.
Several questions before we let you go. You, like you said, you do detoxes, but you've integrated them into a spiritual regimen. And a lot of people refer to that as fasting. So how is that important? And also talk about juicing and raw juicing.
Mm-hmm. Fasting is an absolutely compelling engagement. I love it so much. I do it 4 times a year with the birth of every new season, summer, winter, fall, and spring. I do a 28-day detox fast. And I also lead groups who've never done this before. I say, come on, let's do it as a group. It's much more satisfying. Fasting is said to be the magic pill to cure all ills. And it's about as close as we can get. Fasting. And detoxification is, of course, part of our normal year-long and or seasonal lifestyle. So these all become very, very important. And there was a second part of your question. You just have to remind me, please.
Juicing.
That's right. And when we talk about fasting, I like to do water fasting for up to 10 days. That's a great way of initiating and also causing a rapid extraction of the toxins and poisons that are in my body. But for most people, water fasting is a bit too intense. And so therefore, they can now start juicing your food. The ideal juice for me is vegetable juices. Vegetable juices are for healing. Fruit juices are for detoxing. The thing about it is that vegetable juices do a great job of healing. One of the problems with fruit juices is that they can sometimes concentrate too much sugar, such as apple juice. You might be drinking the sugar of 8 apples in 1 glass of juice. You'd be better off if you ate 8 apples and then used the fiber and the pectins and these other modified citrus pectin and other ingredients within the apple to clean out your whole intestinal system, as opposed to just getting the juice from a huge bunch of grapes and just getting the sugar, the fructose. It can be too much and can overload the body. But when it comes to vegetable juicing, hey, when COVID came up, I came up with a very simple formula. I'm going to share it with everybody. Very simple, only 3 ingredients. And it worked miraculously to keep everyone who came over to my house healthy, called the Vortex. Had 3 ingredients, 1 bunch of fresh kale, 1 red apple or sweet apple, and 1 piece of ginger with the skin intact, about the size of 2 fingers. Just run those 3 ingredients through the juicer, drink 2 ounces of that every day, and it seemed to keep all acute inflammatory diseases at bay. And for people who were having some sort of disorder, including women going through premenstrual syndrome or severe menstrual symptoms, they drink about 4 ounces of that Vortex, and in 10 minutes, the symptoms would disappear and not come back for the rest of the month. Food is nature's most perfect medicine, Brother Junius.
All right, now give us your website again. Where can people purchase the books directly, or what type of retail outlets can they purchase your books? And
okay,
place for response to frequently asked questions, because I'm sure people who are in searching for good health have a lot of questions.
That's right. That's right. And we always love good questions. Give me the tough questions. Those are the ones I like to ask. You can find my books online. Amazon.com has a great supply of about 44 of my published books. Within the next 24 hours, it'll be number 45 on Amazon, as I have published 7 books now for the calendar year 2023, and I have 3 more books queued up to come out by mid-September. We're on a very aggressive schedule of getting these books out. And of course, one of the books, the first book I wrote this year, was How to Write and Publish Your Book in 90 Days. So I'm using my own formula now to even speed up my own productive. So kedi.biz, KEIDI.BIZ is where you can find access to my books. They're going to be autographed, as well as my health-centered books, because I write about economics and politics and future sciences, etc. But if you want to just stick strictly on the health pathway, living super food.com. And as you can see right now, I'm dressed in scrubs, because when I finish the phone call, I'll have the first of a number of different one-on-one consultations that I do with people that are looking to use food to transform their lives, to focus on longevity, extending the lifespan beyond 100 years, which is the subject of one of my books that came out this year, 100 plus lifespan, and to be able to live our lives with healthy lifespan and high performance. That is our birthright. Now it's time for us to go ahead and claim that birthright and then share it with family, share it with our children and our parents.
Exactly. And also because we know a sound mind makes it easier to resist. It makes it easier to see through the what we call in our community okie doke and the flim flam. So more reasons to do this. But of course, optimum health is the greatest reason to do it, because that's the state that the Creator intends us to live in. So
that's Keith, right. And just one more point I want to just say, emphasize, don't wait until you're debilitated by stroke. Don't wait until you're debilitated by overweight, obesity, or these related diseases. Don't wait until you have a cancer diagnosis. It's preventative. It's all about prevention. Put your energy and your investments in disease prevention, including cognitive disorders and Alzheimer's. Once these things set in, it makes it so much harder for you to maintain your optimal health. Thank you for this opportunity, Brother Junius. To all of the Solari family, I send my greetings. We have a brilliant future ahead for us. All we have to do is just claim it and walk that pathway.
Yeah. And not be afraid, because that is the adversaries want us to be afraid. And that way they can keep us in a state of heightened anxiety and manipulate us. So don't be afraid and take agency to your health and your well-being. Brother, I appreciate you. And
very well said.
Again, in the not too distant future. Because now, by then, you'll probably have 10 more books.
Well, I know I will have 3 more coming out very soon, in addition to the one that just came out. So, yeah, I'm going to take your endorsement. I'm going to take that blessing. I will have 10 books out now in the calendar year 2023. That's surpassing my own record by 3 books. So we're on a roll, Brother Junius. Peace and prosperity to all the Solari family.
All right. Thank you.